Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is Champlain Valley Game Night. Welcome in to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You can always find us on the 101.3 ESPN app as well. Just go to your Google Play Store or your Apple Store, and we'll be there as well. A free app. All of our podcasts are available. Full show podcasts, interview segments you may have missed, scores, news, notes, everything you could want is on the app. And also, if you're using that Amazon Echo, just tell Alexa. Just say, enable 101.3 ESPN, and we will pop up there, and we appreciate you listening however you listen. We got a lot coming up on the show today. Well, good news regarding Dustin Pedroia. We'll get the guy who wrote the book, actually wrote the book, on athletes who are trying to defeat Father Time and so far succeeding. A new Patriots running back opens up. First, though, I got to ask this. We did this as a last story standing last week, and this is something that's been on my radar for about a year. So I think if you've listened to this show with any kind of regularity, you will know that I love Taco Bell. And it's something that whenever I have an opportunity to go to it, I will. And I will stop in certain places just based on the fact that they have a Taco Bell. And where it stems from is that there was a Taco Bell in my hometown, and I used to go with the boys, and we would hang out, and we would go there, and that's great. I went to college, there was no Taco Bell. Then I moved to Northfield, Vermont, and there was no Taco Bell. Then I moved to around Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and there was no Taco Bell. And then I came back up here, and there's a Taco Bell, you know, 35 minutes away in St. Albans, and which we'll go to it frequently. And went to Plattsburgh a couple weeks ago, made sure to stop at Taco Bell. So it's been on my radar for a while that Taco Bell-flavored sunflower seeds were coming out. Maybe what you don't know is, obviously, is that I am, if you could physically be addicted to sunflower seeds, I am. I love them, whether it's ranch, whether it's original, whether it's barbecue, whether it's, it doesn't matter what it is, for the most part, I'm in. Okay? I love sunflower seeds. And you can find me, you know, we'll go out and walk our dog at night, and I'll have a cheek full of seeds. In a game, I'll go through two or three bags of seeds. I'll have seeds in the office. I've got a bag in the office right now. So if you are combining sunflower seeds and Taco Bell, you are combining two of my greatest food passions right there. As sad as that is, you are combining two of my greatest food passions. I know that they are out. I have not seen them anywhere. If anybody has seen Taco Bell flavored sunflower seeds, please tell me where they are. Now, Jess told me today she actually went through and found them on Amazon. So they exist out there in the marketplace, and I could order them. But I am just curious. If anybody has seen them actually out and about. I've been to various places in Colchester. I've been to various places in Essex. I have yet to find the Taco Bell sunflower seeds. If you have an answer as to where they might be located in the Vermont and Northern New York area, let me know. 802-655-6672. We do go up until 7 o'clock today. Bruins hockey comes up 6:30 over on AM 960 The Zone. Puck drop face-off just after 7 o'clock. So you can listen to me until 7, and you can flip it on over to the AM side of things and get the Bruins. Let's start with this, though. The Red Sox, if you don't know, have already played today. They've already won today. So 22-8, Mookie Betts, 3 home runs, now has 4 such games in his career, the most of any Red Sox player, passing Ted Williams. And so that alone is amazing. But to me, this game wasn't even about Mookie Betts. To me, this game was about Drew Pomeranz. And I know that's unpopular because chicks dig the long ball. And when you have a guy that hits 3 home runs and a guy who's as amazing as Mookie Betts is, and he's now leading the American League in homers, that's generally the story. But for me today, the story was Drew Pomeranz. And he goes 6 innings and he gives up 3 runs. And let's simply start here. Drew Pomeranz has been awful his first 2 times through the rotation. He's coming back off injury. You give him some leeway, but he's been horrible. He was awful in Oakland. He was awful to start after that. I think he's gone 3 2/3, and I think then 5 innings. So today, Drew Pomeranz comes back and goes 6 innings. That alone represents an improvement. He had an ERA, I want to say, of 7+ coming into today's game. He gives up only 3 earned runs. That also is an improvement. But then you throw in that this bullpen was taxed yesterday. This bullpen has been taxed. And he's able to give you 6 innings. That is hugely important because this team doesn't have an off day tomorrow. They're going right to Texas, and they're going to play in the heat of Arlington, even though it's early May. It's still hot in Arlington, Texas. And that bullpen might have to get used, you know, laboriously again. I mean, they played 13 innings yesterday. Joe Kelly had been suspended, so you're playing undermanned. And there is Drew Pomeranz, the guy who has been awful, who is able to come through and give you 6 innings and be a good, effective bridge to that bullpen. That was huge. That was huge. And as big as the offensive performance by Mookie Betts was, and as big as the 2-run homer by J.D. Martinez was, the pitching effort of Drew Pomeranz is what got the Red Sox through today, because it could have gone south real, real quick. Pomeranz, he struggled early. He walked the leadoff guy, gave up a run early, got bailed out by a bad base running mistake by the Royals, and you were like, okay. Then he gives up another 2 runs later, and it's 3-0 early, and then the third inning, there's the bases loaded and 1 out, and he can't find the plate consistently, and his fastball's not there, and his velocity is 2 miles an hour down from last year. So I'm watching it early, thinking that Drew Pomeranz is destined for trouble. And even more so than that, I was worried about Drew Pomeranz's health. Like, this guy threw 91.8 miles an hour last year as his average fastball. Now he's down into the mid-89-mile-an-hour range. I'm like, what is going on? But he gets a double play ball, and from that point on, the Royals don't score, and they don't really threaten all that much anymore. So that Drew Pomeranz came through today and gave this team 6 innings of 3-run ball, threw a quality start out there, helped save the bullpen, and was able to come back after a really, really rough first 2 1/3 innings. That says something. And I got to give Drew Pomeranz some credit there. I don't love watching Drew Pomeranz pitch. To me, Drew Pomeranz is a hard watch. He is a guy who, he works off his breaking ball, and he works almost exclusively off of his breaking ball, and that's just a low percentage pitch to throw for a strike. Now, he can do it at a good rate because he knows where his bread is buttered, and his bread is buttered with that curveball. But when you throw a lot of curveballs, they're not all getting swung at, and they're not all strikes. So you're going 2-2, 3-2. You're going deep into almost every count when you live off that breaking ball. And that is hard for me as a fan to watch. But credit to Drew Pomeranz today. He did what he needed to do. He did what he needed to do to get the Red Sox in a good position going into Texas, because 13 innings yesterday took its toll. Brian Johnson, the guy who was the losing pitcher yesterday, he threw 2 innings the night before, and he had thrown 2 innings the game 2 nights before that. I mean, that pen is tapped, and Drew Pomeranz helped save it today. So good job to him, and a welcome sign for the Red Sox faithful that want to see Pomeranz get back to what he was a year ago. I mean, 17-6 last season for Drew Pomeranz. He's a guy who helped carry this staff in the midst of David Price being out for a lot of the year and Rick Porcello massively regressing off of a Cy Young season in 2016. Drew Pomeranz kept this rotation together. If he can be good this year, he massively swings this rotation. We look at the Red Sox rotation now, at least I do, and I say Chris Sale's phenomenal. I trust that he's going to be phenomenal way more often than he's not. I think I've got one lock. I look at David Price and say, overall, I think he's been pretty good this year, and I expect him to be good more often than he's not. And I look at him and say, yeah, I think he can go 15-7. I really do. So I think I've got two pretty guaranteed good starters. Rick Porcello is a swing guy, could go either way. He's been great so far. Now I got three. So the one thing holding back the Red Sox right now has just been the reliability in those 4 or 5 starters. If Drew Pomeranz can solidify the 4 spot, well, then all bets are off as to just how good this Red Sox team can be. He is important. So he might be a tough watch, but he is important. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN. and 1013ESPN.com. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. I get word that it's raining out now. I have no idea. I am in a windowless studio. So somebody tell me what the weather is doing, because I was all jacked up to maybe go downtown today, maybe throw some burgers and dogs on the grill again, because we did that last night. I was all pumped. I got baseball practice today for the men's league. Going to go throw after the show ends. I have no idea if it's raining now. People are telling me in some places that it's raining. What is the weather? And more in particular, because I have baseball tonight, what is it doing in South Burlington? If you know what the weather is in South Burlington, let me know. All right, let's move on now to another pitcher. We just talked about Drew Pomeranz. Let's talk about Trevor Bauer. And Trevor Bauer is an interesting guy. And Trevor Bauer plays for the Cleveland Indians. He has said now on record that he thinks that pine tar or other foreign substances should be legal for pitchers. And look, the reason why is he basically said everybody else is doing it. So let's, you know, if you don't do it, you're a competitive disadvantage. So let's all just have the same playing field. And if more people are doing it than aren't, and he believes that, then let's all do it. And then you throw in the caveat that hitters apparently have said they like that pitchers use it because it helps them get a better grip on the ball, and a better grip on the ball means less fastballs coming at their head because there's less unpredictability. I totally disagree. In fact, I completely disagree. I'm not into cheating. That's number one. And right now, that is a rule. You cannot have pine tar or another foreign substance on your hands or your fingers when you are pitching. That is cheating. I am not okay with that. I don't believe just because, and I don't believe that everybody's using it. Now, he certainly would have a better perspective than I would, but I never played with anybody that I knew that was doctoring the ball. Now, it's a lot harder when you're in high school or college to think that way and didn't even know how to use it effectively, but I never saw that being common practice. And then the other thing is there are people who get paid to professionally rub up baseballs that make them more comfortable for pitchers to throw. In fact, one of my favorite things to do before college games was rub up baseballs. I love doing it. They have actual dirt and clay that goes on baseballs that is helped, that helps make it easier for the pitchers to grip. Don't tell me these are not. Look, you know that feeling? If you're a dad out there and you go and you're playing catch with your kid, you've got a brand new baseball. It has that glossy feeling too, and it is. It's tough to throw. It's got to get, you got to drop it a few times and give it some character and give it that dirt feel to it. They're not getting those balls right out of the package in the major leagues. Those balls are professionally rubbed up. They are rubbed up perfectly, and they are rubbed up so that pitchers can get a grip on them. I completely disagree with Trevor Bauer saying that you need a foreign substance to be able to get a grip on the baseball. I totally disagree with that. Those baseballs are rubbed up perfectly for the pitcher to be able to get a grip. And then guys like Bauer, man, they are so hard to coach. And I think anyone who's ever coached, and if you ever have, get on in, 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. We all know that guy or that girl, that player that is so, you just can't get through to them. Trevor Bauer does about everything backwards that you would want as an athlete. You know, we tell pitchers to back off throwing at certain times. Trevor Bauer wants to throw at 375 feet on the fly. He's just in his own world, and he's so stubborn that you can't tell him differently. He's just an eccentric guy, and that's okay, but it's so frustrating as a coach. It's so frustrating as a guy who teaches the game that guys who are wired like that, they are just hard to get across to. I've had two players in my life that I coached that you almost couldn't tell anything to, because if it wasn't something that they, you know, once they believed in something, that was it. And one guy I started to get through to, and one guy I never got through to. And it's just hard. But I disagree with Trevor Bauer. I don't believe that pitchers need that advantage. You're already throwing 97 miles an hour with nasty curveballs. I don't need you having even nastier of a curveball by doctoring up the ball. They already rub up the balls perfectly. I don't need the pine tar to get a great grip. I understand in some places where it's really hot and you get, you know, real sweaty, maybe the ball can get a little slippery, but that's when you step off and you rub the ball on your hands and you get back on the mound and do it again. I did that for 27 years now, and I don't see pine tar being a necessary for pitchers in their repertoire. I just don't. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. When we come back, this is a topic that's been on my mind for a long time. Athletes who are trying to defeat Father Time. Well, the guy who wrote the actual book on that is coming up next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. This is a topic that has been brewing in my mind for a while, and I've never really broached it too much because it just seems complicated to me. But I'm watching the Cavaliers the other night, and I'm watching LeBron just dominate in Game 1 down the stretch. He grabs every rebound. He goes to the hole at will. He pulls up for three. He does whatever he wants. And I'm like, how is a guy 15 years in the NBA doing this night in and night out? And then you continue realizing it's not just LeBron, it's Tom Brady, it's Zdeno Chara. We watch this Bruins series at age 40. Athletes are playing very, very well at ages they should not be playing well. And you go out, Serena Williams, Roger Federer, it doesn't matter who it is. Now we finally can get some answers. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and now find the guy who literally wrote the book on athletes playing well when they shouldn't be. It's author Jeff Brokovicy. He wrote the book, just came out yesterday, as a matter of fact, called Play On, the New Science of Elite Performance at Any Age. Jeff, that's a long intro. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for having me here.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. And let's start with this, because it's truly amazing. We follow the Patriots up here in the Bruins religiously. So to see Chara and Brady, we've known about them, but it goes way beyond them. It's amazing what athletes are doing now, pushing upper 30s and 40s.
I think it's the biggest story in sports. And the reason is that the longer an athlete plays, you know, if you take age out of the equation, these players, they get more famous, you know, they get more accomplished, they get better at what they do because of their skill, and so they become bigger and bigger stars. And what we're seeing now is the biggest stars in the game aren't retiring at the age we're used to or fading away and washing out. You know, they're hanging around, and therefore it's all we can talk about. You know, I mean, sports is always so driven by discussion of age. It's always like, you know, is this guy, does he have a tread on the tires? You know, does he still have his fastball? But now it's no longer sort of mandatory that these people go away after a few years.
You know, we're used to the narrative, as you kind of said it there, the guy loses his fastball. Up here, a lot of Yankee fans, we're used to seeing the guy like CC Sabathia, who once threw 97, is now throwing 87 and getting by because we just say, oh, well, he adapted to his new skill set. But in this case, some of these guys are not only adapting, they're getting better and better. They're not just learning how to play with diminished stuff, and that's what's so amazing to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, age is it is a thing. Okay, so nobody's found the fountain of youth yet. You're not necessarily going to see a lot of pitchers who are throwing 97 at age, you know, 47 or age 57, but you are seeing a difference in how they can physically turn back the clock and how they can, you know, sort of resist some of the ravages of age. But the other point that you made about the strategic changes that they're making to get better, you're seeing that all over the place. I mean, Federer, to me, is one of my favorite examples.
Yes.
Just, you know, he people say his backhand is better than it ever was. He's got all kinds of he plays a more complete game than he did 10 years ago. I think Roger Federer now might be able to beat Roger Federer 10 years ago.
And the other thing that is amazing to me also is not only there's no one way that athletes seem to be doing this. We've heard famously about the TB12 method, and that's different from the way that Zdeno Chara does it. And I read a story about Jason Terry of the Milwaukee Bucks, who granted doesn't play big minutes, but he's playing in the NBA at age 40, and he does it a different way. It just seems there's no right answer to this.
There's not, but I do think that there is a sort of a paradigm shift that's happened in sports, especially around athletic conditioning. This idea of bigger, faster, stronger that dominated for so many years. You know, you go back to the 70s, and professional athletes actually had the body of regular, you know, fit but regular people. And then, you know, you fast forward 20 years, and you start to see everybody. You know, everybody has to be kind of a bulked up, jacked up superhero. You know, comic book superhero. what happened starting, you know, around like 15 years ago, and you really saw it with you know, Greg Popovich leading the charge, is they realized like fitness doesn't mean your fitness doesn't help you if you're exhausted. Fitness doesn't help if you're overtrained and you're coming into games carrying fatigue from the last game or from your hard practice that day. We're starting to see, you know, freshness and rest being valued just as much as fitness. And that, I think, is the huge thing that is extending people's careers.
Author Jeff Prokovici with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, just wrote the book called Play On, about how athletes are playing well when they shouldn't be playing well, when we think that they should be waning in their sport. You know, I'm a diehard Seattle Mariner fan, so I've been following Ichiro for the better part of 20 years, and I always looked at Ichiro and said, this guy's a freak of nature with how much he stretches and how flexible he is, and that's what's going to allow him to play longer. Then you hear Brady talk about pliability and flexibility. Is that now becoming as important or more important than just pure strength or speed?
So I don't think it's – I wouldn't say pliability or flexibility per se. What I would say is movement quality. If you talk to sports scientists, if you talk to trainers and physiologists in the elite sports world, they talk a lot about movement quality and about mobility and stability. You need to be able to move easily through your range of motion. You need to have a kinetic chain in your body that transfers energy really smoothly, instead of placing stresses where they shouldn't be. And so, you know, for Brady, that might mean that he has to have a great deal of what he calls pliability to be able to have that really high quality movement. You know, for some other athletes, less flexibility can be better. It can make it, for certain types of runners, having a little less flexibility can actually make you a somewhat more efficient runner. But what you don't want to have is any kind of restrictions that force your body to compensate in ways that transfer force to somewhere it can cause damage.
You know, again, you talk about Brady, and now Hanley Ramirez of the Red Sox is off to a great start, and he attributes part of it to him using the TB12 method. Do you believe the TB12 method works, or is it just a ploy to get us to buy cookbooks and things?
I absolutely believe it works. I think, everything I've heard from people who are experts in the specific areas of nutrition and athletic conditioning will say that it doesn't work for exactly the reasons that Tom Brady and Alex Guerrero say that it works. Particularly this idea about their ideas about inflammation and the importance of limiting inflammation from the foods you eat and the, you know, alkalinity of the water you drink. It's not particularly supported by science, and in some ways it even goes against the best recommendations for athletes about eating a diversity of foods, about letting in some inflammation from your workouts help accelerate your body's adaptation and strengthening process. So I think that there's a lot that they do that's obviously right there. It's just that the elements of it that get the most attention tend to be the ones that have the least scientific evidence behind them.
Interesting. Jeff, we'll get you out of here on what I think is going to be just two more questions. Even 10 years ago, if a guy was doing what LeBron is doing, or doing what Brady is doing, or doing what, you know, even Justin Verlander is a guy who I thought was done 3 years ago and now is back to throwing 96 miles an hour. The answer was, oh, he's cheating. The answer was, he's on steroids. Let's test him. The narrative seems to be going away. Maybe not going away, but it seems to be getting less and less.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I don't think, I certainly don't think steroid use or PED use has gone away, and I think that there's always going to be a proportion of the athlete population that is doing it. I think that there is always going to be a very large proportion of the athlete population that won't do it, and that are very vocally annoyed that they have to compete with people who do it. But I think because of trends like the one I was talking about before, that we've sort of seen that bigger, faster, stronger doesn't necessarily equal higher performance. The idea that you need to do a lot of, you need to juice a lot so you can increase your squat max in the weight room, and that's going to make you a better pitcher. That idea has kind of gone out the window. When you focus on quality of movement rather than, your reps max, then you don't have that same pressure to juice. It's more about the other things you do than about necessarily lifting the gym.
Jeff, I'm 28 years old. I played 4 years of college baseball, still play baseball, competitive league in quotes. It's not beer league, but it's not the majors either. But so I'm playing, I'm athletic, I'm active. And I look at these guys and I say, look, they've got a lot of things I don't have. One is money, two is time, and three is access to great trainers and stuff like that. How can any of this stuff be applied to your everyday weekend warrior?
So much of it can be applied to everyday athletes. I mean, I'm the same way, and that was my question going into the book: is what's real science, A, and what's accessible to us, and also so the book really focuses on what is accessible, and I really made a point of trying to talk not just to the you know LeBron Jameses of the world, but to athletes like you know I spent a lot of time with Canadian Olympians, and Canada puts a lot less money into its Olympics program than we do, so they really focus on only the handful of things that they think make the biggest difference for their athletes. That's where I found a lot of the value here.
So watch out, Green Mountain Baseball League. That means I'm going to be pitching well into my 40s here at a level I didn't think possible. Jeff Prakovici, he's the author, Play On, The New Science of Elite Performance at Any Age, just came out this week. It's a fascinating read. It's a fascinating topic. And here in New England, we hope to see the fruits of all this work in Tom Brady's at Anochar and others for a long time. Jeff, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for making time for me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course. And I enjoyed it, too, because that is something. I'm watching LeBron last night, and I'm just thinking to myself, this isn't supposed to be happening. And we say this a lot. Like, think about Russell Westbrook. Think about Derrick Rose. And basketball may be the easiest way to think about this conceptually. We always say that guy's a great athlete. Like, Russell Westbrook, he's a great leaper. He's so fast. But when you get older and when that athleticism goes away, what do you have to turn to? And Westbrook doesn't have a great jump shot. He doesn't. He's, I think, the worst qualified three-point shooter in the league. So if you don't have a great jump shot to fall back on, what do you really have when the athleticism goes away? And I think the same thing about Derrick Rose. He got injured a bunch of times, and because he never became a great shooter, I don't know what Derrick Rose really has right now. In the same way, Kobe Bryant, when he got older, he developed such a pretty fall-away game. He could hit the three. He was a great scorer. He didn't need athleticism. LeBron, number one, I'm waiting for that. I'm just waiting still for that athleticism to go away. He's 30-plus, and I'm sitting here saying 15 years in the league, and that he's still the most gifted athlete on the court, and that is incredible to me. And last night down the stretch, he's hitting threes from 2-3 feet behind the line. He's gobbling up every rebound. It's unbelievable what LeBron James is doing. And you know what? A lot of people don't like LeBron. And I understand it. Number one, people are jealous of him. They're tired of him winning. Get that. People don't like he complains to the refs. Understand. People don't like he's talking politics when they don't think that he should be. Understand if you want. I understand if you want your sports to just be sports. I get it. We don't have to agree on any of it, but I get your perspective. The one thing we should all be agreeing on is that it's amazing. And it is amazing what Tom Brady's doing. And it is amazing what Roger Federer's doing. And it is amazing that Michael Phelps was winning gold medals in his fourth Olympics. That's incredible. And it's something that we've never seen before. We've never seen this before, and it's fascinating, and I appreciate Jeff Prakovici for coming on to talk about it because it was absolutely amazing. If you want to get in, you can, 802-655-6672. Chris, the Mets fan, gets in on the Town Fair Tire text line. He says, Brady, I totally agree with your perspective on Trevor Bauer. Heck, even in college, the balls were rubbed up perfectly. And he says he loves the show also. Chris, I appreciate that. Bruins hockey is tonight. It's coming up at 6:30, well, just pregame show just started over on AM 960 The Zone. So the face-off, the puck drop, is just after 7. And there's something really fascinating you should look out for today in that game. If you're a Bruins fan, pay attention to this because it's something that I promise you, I know we haven't talked about it. I know I haven't even paid much attention to it, but it is a big part of the story. Patrice Bergeron has been getting kicked out of the face-off circle at a really, really high rate in these playoffs. Listen to these numbers, okay? Bergeron was thrown out of the faceoff circle 6 times in game 1 against the Maple Leafs. He was kicked out 5 times in game 2. He has been kicked out 23 times this postseason. He's been kicked out of the faceoff circle 23 times in this postseason. And the guy who has replaced him has been Brad Marchand. And of those 23 times where Bergeron was kicked out, Marchand has only won eight. 8 of 23 on the faceoffs for Brad Marchand. I know that sounds like not a huge deal, but if you can't control the puck off the faceoff, you have a really difficult time controlling the puck, period. That is what I have learned, even with my one of my most fundamentally basic knowledges of hockey. One of the first things that stuck out to me when I started doing college hockey play-by-play a decade ago was you need to be able to win the faceoffs, because if you win the faceoff in your defensive zone, you help clear the puck out of your defensive zone away from your own net. And if you win it in the offensive zone, you have a better chance to score and you have a more sustainable chance to score. The team that controls the puck more often generally has a better chance to win. It doesn't always happen. You can lose a game massively outshooting your opponent. That is very, very true. But more often than not, if you can dominate puck possession, you have a real chance to win a hockey game. And the Bruins with Patrice Bergeron in the faceoff circle do that at a far better rate than when he gets kicked out of the faceoff circle. And he's been getting kicked out an awful lot lately. And more so, he doesn't even know why. If you read the quotes from Patrice Bergeron, he's not even sure what he's doing wrong. If you're a hockey guy, have you noticed this? We have a ton of people who get in constantly about hockey. And they want to talk about a lot of nitpicky stuff. That's great. This would be a nitpicky thing. Have hockey guys picked up on this? Have Bruins fans picked up on this? If you're a hockey player, what is it exactly that causes you to get thrown out of the zone? Let us know on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. When we come back, a Patriots running back opens up, and I'm not so sure that he should be, and some good news on Dustin Pedroia as he nears his return for the Red Sox. That's all next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on a Wednesday. And it was a beautiful Wednesday for a long time. Then I was told it was raining. Now I'm told it's sunny again. I have no idea what it's doing, but it was a great sunny day. I don't even know if I said Sunday. It's a great Wednesday. It's been a great sunny day for a portion of the day, and it's been welcome, too, because I felt like winter was never going to end there for a while. It's our final segment again of Champlain Valley Game Night, Bruins hockey, 7 o'clock for the faceoff over on AM 960 The Zone. Patriots running back Jeremy Hill is talking, and I'm not so sure that he should be. And the reason is not because I think Jeremy Hill is a bad guy or he didn't say anything dumb. He just said it's going to be nice to be on the other side of the "we're on to Cincinnati." Remember when Bill Belichick said famously, "We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati." Well, Jeremy Hill was on Cincinnati at that time, and he said that that game is what showed him that the Patriots were the best run team in the league. And it was a 47-13 win for the Pats that night or that afternoon against Cincy. And he said it's going to be nice to be a part of that. I don't know that Jeremy Hill should be talking so confidently about being on the team, because I really am questioning whether or not he's going to be on this roster come opening day in September. Jeremy Hill signed a one-year deal, $1.5 million. Not all that's guaranteed. So financially, he doesn't cost the Patriots a lot, but you look at what the Pats have at running back, I don't really know that there's room for Jeremy Hill. This team has real money invested in Mike Gillislee right now. Even though he fell out of favor last year, he'd make it more money than Jeremy Hill is. So there's going to be more of a cap hit if you get rid of him. James White's making money. He's on this team. Rex Burkhead's making money. He's on this team. And Sony Michel was just drafted in the first round. He's on this team. I think you're going into next year with four running backs, and Brandon Bolden, your special teamer, is going to be one also. So I think you're looking at five guys with the running back label to them, four of which who really carry the football. So Gillislee and Hill are going to be the ones battling it out. And I don't know that Hill, I don't know that there's room for him on this team. Again, it's not that he's bad. He was a guy who ran for, 1,000 yards his first 2 years in the league. And then he just massively fell out of favor, but I don't know there's room for him on this roster. And he's talking about being on this roster like it's an absolute certainty. And I just don't think that it is. And I saw this. You know, people have said that the running back is devalued, and people have pointed out that the Patriots have never had a phenomenal running back. Curtis Martin was there for just 2 years. Corey Dillon was there at the back end of his career. But by and large, the Patriots running back cast has been a group of cast-offs or a group of hybrid backs, from Kevin Faulk to Antoine Smith to, you know, to the current crew, and Deion Lewis when he was there, and now James White. It's been guys that don't have big name cachet to you. And maybe Sony Michel changes that. But I think people associate the Patriots with just not caring that much about the running back position. We'll put anybody back there and we'll turn him into a useful player for us. Well, I saw the research today, and I saw some people say this on Twitter, and I went and did the research. That is not really the case. The idea that the Patriots kind of view the running back as just a plug-and-play position, or is that it's somehow devalued, just isn't true. The Patriots last year spent the fourth most dollars on their running back position. Last year was fourth. This year it's seventh, and Sony Michel hasn't signed yet. So I have to imagine it's going to go up. The Patriots are spending in the top 10 in terms of money on the running back position. Top five last year. They care about the running back position. And then for them to just draft a running back at number 31 when they had needs at quarterback, at defensive back, at offensive lineman, at pass rusher, for them to pass on all of that to go and get a running back, a position that we seemingly thought they were set in, that shows you just how much the Patriots and Bill Belichick value what's going on in New England and just how much they value what the running back does in New England. Cody in St. Albans says, the weather depends on where you are. It's raining where I am, but where my mom is, it's doing nothing. So I don't know where you are or where your mom is, but hopefully I'm going to places where it's doing nothing. But yeah, so in the Patriot philosophy, I think people look at it as, running backs don't matter. Whoever's back there will just catch balls out of the backfield and do what they're supposed to do, because it worked for Kevin Faulk and it worked for Shane Vereen and it worked for Deion Lewis. It can work for anybody. Well, the Patriots are putting real tangible dollars and real financial resources in to making it be that way. And it's not something that you generally think of, because we look at the Patriots and say, well, they're just finding everybody off the scrap heap. But that isn't true. They are investing money. They spent the fourth most dollars in the league last year on the running back position, and right now they're seventh. Bill Belichick cares more about the running back position than we have thought. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. I have been hard on Dustin Pedroia. I will not be hard on Dustin Pedroia right now. This is a great news for Red Sox fans, and it's great news about Dustin Pedroia. Dustin Pedroia is rehabbing right now, and I read a lengthy story from Jen McCaffrey of The Athletic, and Jen McCaffrey comes on Sports Saturday quite a bit with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki and Aaron. And so I read her story about Pedroia's road back, and he's down in Fort Myers, and he's working with a bunch of minor leaguers that are getting ready to go, you know, to the New York Penn League, probably, in all actuality. We'll see them at Centennial Field playing for the Lowell Spinners. So Pedroia's working with 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, and they're picking his brain, and apparently he has been very, very receptive to helping younger players. He has been very, very receptive to sharing his knowledge with young guys. He has been all in on the rehabbing process. He's been all in with all that that encompasses. I mean, think about it. A 19-year-old kid who was drafted last year gets a chance to be around a 12-year veteran, a World Series champ, an MVP, a batting champ. You're going to be excited. But I think based on what we saw last year, I would have thought Pedroia wouldn't be all about trying to help that kid. Pedroia, to me, has been a guy who has been lauded for his work ethic and lauded for his grit and his commitment to the game and his commitment to the craft. He has never been lauded for his social skills. He's never been lauded for his relatability. He's never been lauded for being somebody who's willing to help. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but the narrative is not out there. So the fact that I hear about Dustin Pedroia taking young players under his wing, that's an important thing, because one of the biggest worries that I have had about the Red Sox and their 22-8 start is, what happens when Dustin Pedroia comes back? How does he fit? And he's targeting a May 25th date, and Tom Carrott of Nesson told us yesterday that he's looking at Memorial Day weekend, so we're in that May 25th range. And I thought, what happens to this team when Pedroia comes back? Can they all just mesh together? Will Pedroia, who in my mind is stubborn, is so gritty. He never wants to leave the lineup, and he's so regimented. Can he fit right into this lineup? Because that's an important question to ask, and it's an important dynamic to figure out. Because last year, we say the Red Sox didn't have leaders. They had leaders. They were just negative leaders. From Pedroia to David Price, negative toxins led the Red Sox down that road. This Red Sox team appears to be very likable. And I read a great story. It was last week, and we didn't have time to get to it, but there was a story about the Red Sox when they were in Toronto playing the Blue Jays. The Bruins happened to be in Toronto playing the Maple Leafs in the playoffs, and I want to say it was for Game 6. It was for Game 6 of that Bruins-Maple Leafs series, and I think it's a game the Maple Leafs won. But 18 guys on that Bruins team went to the Bruins. 18 guys on the Red Sox team, rather, went to the Bruins and Maple Leafs game. And you talk about the team camaraderie, the team chemistry. And team chemistry, to me, is always something that is undervalued. Because I think it's important. A lot of people think it doesn't matter. And in the sabermetric world, the interpersonal relationships of a clubhouse or a locker room don't seem to matter to anybody. But they matter to me. They matter to people that have played the game at any level or coached the game. You know how important it is. And in any office building, to have good team chemistry and to get along. You might not all love your boss, but if you love each other, that goes a long way. This Red Sox team seems to be like that. Chris Sale was at the game, and they had a team dinner beforehand, and he was there, a guy I consider to be gruffy and a loner. He was there. David Price was there. This team seems to be close. They seem to be tight-knit. They seem to be likable at a far greater clip than they were a year ago. Because last year, they simply put, they were not likable. Pedroia wasn't likable. Price wasn't likable. Farrell was, you know, he didn't do anything to make him unlikable, but he also didn't elicit any, you know, real emotional response from the fans, and certainly it didn't seem like the players. So this team was not a team to root for last year. If you're rooting for them based on, you know, if you took away the B that everybody cares about, you look at this team and say, they're not a team I want to root for. This year they are. Dustin Pedroia coming back can add to that or can take away from it. And it sounds like, based on what he's doing in Fort Myers, it sounds like he is willing to be a guy who helps that equation. And that is a very, very important thing. Because Pedroia is a leader on this team. It's just a question of which kind of leader he is. And his relationship with Alex Cora should help. The good faith that has already been built up in that clubhouse should help. Pedroia needs to come in and add to that and not take away from it. Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. David gets in. He goes, Pedroia leads by example. That's enough. Yes, generally I agree with you. But you can lead by example in a negative way also. And David, I think you would agree with that. Remember last year when Matt Barnes threw at Manny Machado or threw at an Oriole, maybe it was Machado, and Pedroia instantly said, that's not me, that's them? Well, there he is putting himself on the island. And he didn't stand up for his teammates. And he didn't stay with his teammates. He didn't stand together with his teammates. That's leading by an example. But that's leading by an example in a negative way. I agree with you. If he plays hard and is a uplifting force in the clubhouse, then great. But you can lead by example in a negative way. You can come in and be entitled. You can come in and be stubborn. You can come in and be moody. If Pedroia does that, then that team chemistry goes south. If none of that happens, then he slides right into the team, just adds another really good player who's now healthy with a good attitude, and that's what you want. All right, that will do it for us today. Thank you to Martin St. Louis for joining us in the huddle. Thank you to Jeff Prokovacy for joining us in Champlain Valley Game Night. Buster Olney also in the huddle as well. Big day tomorrow. Also, big deal, little deal, no deal in the huddle. And we'll also talk with former Red Sox All-Star Shea Hillenbrand. So it'll be a fun day tomorrow as well. Bruins hockey over on AM 960 The Zone. So flip it on over. You can do it now. We'll be back tomorrow with 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and Wingo
is what one NFL team thinks of the Browns.